Hello, everyone, and welcome to Awakening Into Life, a podcast series that is devoted to the exploration of non-duality, self-realization, and the embodiment of awakening. My name is Bradley, and I am a teacher of non-dual contemplative wisdom with a master's degree in clinical mental health counseling. I have spent the last 7 years working as a non-dual teacher, guide, counselor, coach, and mentor, helping people move through this curious journey of awakening that can many times be very confusing, disorienting, disturbing, and difficult. This particular episode is about my own awakening journey. It is part two in a six-part series that goes through what the first couple of years of awakening looked like for me. And then I provide an update in the last couple of episodes in this particular series, an update of what my life looks like now, 5 years after the original talk was given. So I want to invite you to bring your own sort of sense of curiosity and interest, whatever in you feels maybe cautious or skeptical, whatever in you seems to be looking for something, and just bring your ear, bring your awareness, bring your heart into a position of listening. And perhaps you might hear something in my own story, in my own journey, that touches you where you are and can offer some small comfort. So please sit back, relax, and enjoy the second part of my awakening story. I got in the door and I realized that my rage had subsided. My rage was gone. There was something very peaceful. Having encountered someone who knew my story, but had seen it through their own eyes, had seen it through their own experience. And so I went out back, and I was exhausted. I mean, exhausted. This whole day of all this stuff, I was just thoroughly exhausted. And I sat down in the backyard, and I started breathing. I had been doing a little bit of that. I had been, for maybe about a week to 2 weeks up to that point, I had been kind of getting a little bit back into the Vipassana, but it was different because I was doing it actively. Like, I wasn't sitting and meditating, but I was using the same breathing technique, like in my waking life, in my waking moments. I had just kind of picked it up a little here and a little bit there, and so I was practicing it. So I sat there on the back porch, and I started this breath, and it was really interesting. At a certain point in time, what I can say is that I noticed that everything was completely clear. And the only way to explain is to say there was awareness of awareness. There was awareness of awareness. And I remember that Rodney Smith, the teacher I'd been with many years prior, had said in the initial meditation training he'd done with us, he had said, you know, one of the interesting things about awareness is when you can shine it like a light in a dark room. And when you're able to take the light of awareness and move it in every direction of the mind and see that the whole thing is empty. See that the whole thing is empty. See the whole thing is clear. Just for awareness of awareness. And I had this, I mean, everything else fell away. I mean, everything, all thought, all modes of paying attention, everything, it all fell away. It all just, I heard somebody use the words the other day, the edges fell away. The edges fell away. And I remember that we had a Buddha statue in the backyard, and I remember looking over and I started having a conversation with the Buddha. I don't know what I said because I can't remember any of that. But it was just this profound joy, this enormous opening. And I remember going inside, and I went to the bathroom, and I was looking in the mirror in the bathroom, and I was having a conversation with myself, but I don't know what that was about. I remember picking up, I had these texts of the Buddha's words, and I picked it up, and for the very first time, everything the Buddha said made sense to me. All of it made sense. And I started making notes in the margin. I'm like, oh yeah, okay, this is what this means. And it was just this whole beautiful series of things that all happened. I had a journal at the time, and I was writing, the first words in the journal are like, I love this pen, I love this page, I love this notebook, I love this moment. It was like this whole outpouring of love, something I had never, ever, ever seen in my experience before. And so for maybe about, I probably sat outside for what could have been 15 minutes, it could have been an hour. The whole thing probably lasted maybe 3 or 4 hours in total. And then I remember going through this period for the next like 3 weeks, this next 2 or 3 weeks of dealing with all kinds of upswings and downswings in trying to understand anything at all. It was about 2 weeks. I was very, very, very confused, because I hadn't been looking for a spiritual awakening. That was not on my list. At the time, I stumbled into something. I don't know what I stumbled into, but I stumbled into something. There was another experience that I had shortly after that, where one night I had gone to bed, and I remember that I don't remember what exactly it was, but I do remember that for a period of time I could not move my physical body, could not move at all, and I was trapped in my mind screaming. That was a really powerful experience. That lasted a good 15 minutes or so of being completely unable to move. There was another experience I had. By this point, I had gone back to the Seattle Insight Meditation Society, and I had started working with one of their teachers there, and I only saw her maybe twice. But I remember this event that occurred where it felt like there were two beings. There were two beings inside me, like wrestling for dominance. Like, it was this terrifying sensation of having been occupied by something, right? You know, now again, as a kid, I had been very interested in the occult. I had been very interested in, you know, all these things that were very, you know, that were being presented in, you know, as dark and evil and all kinds of stuff. But I was interested in those things. So here I am now in this experience of, holy shit, I'm being possessed, right? Being possessed. And going through that experience, I remember calling this teacher, and I was like, I don't know what the hell's going on. I'm absolutely terrified. And she just tells me, it's all okay. Don't worry about it. It's all okay. It's perfectly normal. It's perfectly normal. It's perfectly normal. It was terrifying. Then things started to get even more interesting, because there were these little synchronicities that started occurring. They were just little things. Certain things would kind of come up a certain way, and I'd be like, oh, wow, that's curious, or wow, that's an interesting coincidence, or wow, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And the problem I had at that point was my ego was so huge, so bigger than life, right? So smart, so capable, like all these ways in which I was covering over that sense of unworthiness, right? All the ways in which that ego was built up. So here I am, basically this awakened ego. And what came out of the experience of the awakened ego was, oh, look, and again, you know, the only context I had at this point were the Christian stuff I had been raised on, where it was like, none of this makes sense and it's all evil. And then the other thing I had to work with was Buddhism, But I was more interested in the Buddhism. So I'm looking at it and I'm like, all right, here's my experience and here's how my experience lines up with Buddhism. Oh, look, stream enterer. Wow, cool. Yeah, no, I've got that. And then I'm looking at the next level and I'm like, okay, and then the next level, okay, and the next level. And suddenly I'm looking at it and I'm like, oh, the Arhat or the, you know, the Buddha. I'm like, I have awakened as the Buddha. Oh my gosh, this is great. I'm the Buddha. It was really wonderful. I started doing all this research on the next Buddha, the Maitreya, right? And I started seeing all these lines about how the Maitreya was also the next incarnation of Jesus Christ. How this individual is the world teacher that the whole world has been waiting for, you know. And so I got wrapped up in such a beautiful little story. A beautiful little story. And so... About 2 weeks into this experience after awakening, and again, some days I would be so completely just drenched in tears because I didn't know what the hell was going on. And some days I felt the whole world felt bigger than life. It was just all so amazing. But most of it was really hard. It was really very difficult. So after about 2 weeks of kind of going through this stuff, I had another experience. Where I was listening to Adi Ashanti, The End of Your World, and he had talked in there about how he would journal when he would find himself in these, what he called it, these Velcro places, like where he found himself Velcro to his experience, or, you know, kind of trapped in some way, shape, or form, and he would journal about these things. And so I started journaling. So I'm sitting at my computer in my office at home, and I'm writing on the computer, and I'm writing, you know, I'm just briefly getting into... I had this experience, and I'm not sure what's going on, but I think I'm the Buddha. And I stopped the whole thing. My whole experience in that moment stopped. I had one of these experiences where I couldn't move. I couldn't move. My hearing went dead. I couldn't hear. My hearing went dead. And there was this experience of just being... Of just being barely there is the only way to really explain it. Just being barely there. And it was this kind of energetic, there was this energetic shifting quality to the experience of it. And I didn't know what was going on. And I sat in this energetic experience. And I sat in this energetic experience for maybe about 10 or 15 minutes. But it didn't feel right. There was something about it that didn't feel right. And I didn't understand. I was like, okay. But I also didn't want to move because here I am being like, oh, this is it. Like, here I am. I've been on these for 2 weeks now. I had this awakening. I've been going through all, I've been doing all this soul searching and studying, and I'm ready to be the Buddha. I'm ready. And so I have this, you know, I don't want to get up and move because I don't want to spoil it. I'm like, this is it. This is what I've been waiting for. This is the thing, man. It's the mothership has come to get me. Woohoo! You know? And so, but it wasn't right. It didn't feel right. And so I ended up moving, and I went out into the backyard. And I laid down in the backyard, spread eagle. And I'm watching this whole thing, right, from this position of just kind of a different kind of awareness that really hadn't been cultivated to that point, but it was active. And... people talk about out-of-body experiences and stuff like that. I don't really get into any of that kind of stuff because, again, I am a skeptic at heart. I really am. I think being a skeptic can help us challenge ourselves in various ways, so I consider it to be beneficial in my case. But this is the only way to describe it is as kind of an out-of-body experience, but not really. So I was laying there, and it was this... I found myself laying there in a kind of tug of war. And it was as if something was drawing me outward and upward. Drawing me outward and upward. And something in me was resisting this process of being drawn upward and upward. And so I was kind of... But I didn't want to struggle. This is a very important factor in the whole thing. I didn't want to struggle. So I was trying not to struggle, which is what creates struggle, right? Trying not to struggle creates struggle. So I'm trying not to struggle because I want this. I want to go. I want to disappear. I want everything to melt away so that I can do whatever it is I'm supposed to do. I want this magical moment, this thing called enlightenment. And it became this tug of war, and there would be this huge like pull, and then there'd be this resistance, and so I'd be kind of pulling back. And it was almost as if there were a whole bunch of threads that were connecting, you know, whatever's trying to draw me out, or, you know, there were all these threads. And so it would draw me out, and a thread would snap, and then I'd pull back in. And then it'd draw me out, and another thread would snap, and I'd pull back in. And so it kept going back and forth and back and forth, like a thread being broken each time I was being pulled out. And then I got down to this sensation, this feeling of this last thread being in place. And I went back and forth and back and forth in this little tug of war. This whole process probably lasted like maybe at least an hour, maybe an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours. So I'm on this last thread. Earlier that very day, I had been walking through the mall and I had, you know, the United Way or one of these groups there that adopts children, whatever, they were there. And so I had filled out this paperwork to adopt this little boy in some country in Africa. And, you know, just send money and, you know, make sure he's getting taken care of. So I'm sitting here having this back and forth. There's this one thread left. And I remember, it's a touching moment really for me, but I remember calling to mind the image of that little boy's face and saying, for him, for him, for him, for all beings, right? But for him, you know, all beings is too big. You know, if you could put a face on all beings, it makes it a little easier. And so I brought his face into my mind, and that last thread kind of snapped away. It was really interesting. And what I can say is that it felt very much like I was there and not there at the same time. It was like I was being emptied, but also being made full again at the same time. Like something was being drawn out, but then it was being replaced with something else. And I laid there after this experience for probably another half an hour until I realized how cold it was, because this is November in Seattle. I'm laying in the backyard on the ground. So I'm freezing, completely dressed, and I'm freezing. You know, it's like probably 2 or 3 in the morning by that point. And I managed to pick myself up the ground, and I stumbled to the shower, and I turned on the shower as hot as I could make it, and clothes and all just fell into the shower. And I'm just laying there, exhausted by this experience, overwhelmed by this experience. You know, it was just such an incredible thing. And then this energy that I had experienced outside, it came back in a different way. And the only way to explain is to say it was there as kind of a comforting presence that asked the question, what now? What now? Like, all right. You have what you thought you wanted. You've had this thing that you want, that you would like to point. Again, this is kind of in hindsight, but this thing you want to be able to point at. You've had an experience. You had an experience of awakening, and now you've had an experience of enlightenment. So, of course, that's not, enlightenment is none of that. It's none of that. This is just, it's a continuous process of awakening a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more in a myriad of different ways. Some of the most explosive ways in which an awakening presents itself can be ways at the very beginning. And for some of us, it comes all at once. For some of us, it comes, you know, in different chapters of our lives. But it comes when it needs to, in the way that it needs to. So I had that experience. And I remember, you know, I woke her up. It's 3 in the morning. I'm sitting there. And this finally happened. And I'm like, you know, I'm like all zen, and here I am, I'm ready. There's so many things. I remember her telling me one point she had had this dream that she didn't want to share with me because she thought it would get my ego going. And she was like, I want to tell you now because, you know, your awakening seems really sincere. She had, again, these are all synchronicities. She had a master's degree in transpersonal psychology from Sophia University. So she was very well versed in a lot of, you know, spiritual stuff. She studied a lot of Eckhart Tolle. She had a rich background in spirituality. She was doing life coaching and stuff like that for people. So I remember one time looking at her and I was like, I don't know what's going on. It's all so broken. It's all so messed up. I don't know what the hell is happening. And she's like, what sounds real? The fact that you're this confused is something that we would identify as a spiritual crisis. And that's a signifier that it's real, that it's not manufactured, the fact that it's so, that it's got so much to it. So she was a wonderful coach through many things, but she had told me that she had this dream of walking with a lion. And I was at this time having these discussions about, you know, so I was, I'm a Leo. A Leo is my astrological sign, let's put it that way. And so I was connecting with that, you know, I was connected with everything. And so it was very much, I'm the lion, I'm the Leo. And so she was telling me, yeah, had this dream that I was walking with a lion and that we, you know, we walked together into the light. And so things had kind of fallen apart there, and I started looking for my own apartment, which by this point I had developed a relationship with synchronicity that was really just beginning to, I was really just beginning to understand. And this relationship with synchronicity was something that I was starting to surrender to, because, you know, it's like the moment itself was speaking to me. And that's the only way to say it. The moment itself was speaking to me. And so I went to look at this one set of apartments. They told me to go check out another set of apartments, and I signed up that day. And I ended up in the perfect apartment. I ended up in the Kennedy Building, in the University District of Seattle. It was a 7-story building, and I had this apartment on the corner of the 7th floor. Mine was one of the only ones that didn't have a balcony, so I couldn't go outside. So I would go up to the roof. Beautiful rooftop observatory, beautiful view of the entire city of Seattle. There was not a more magnificent place to really kind of come into the experience of awakening. It was just a perfect environment. You know, when I look back upon the apartment I found myself in, and like even the way it was set up, like where the bathtub was like in the center of a part of the apartment. It wasn't a bathroom that shared a wall with anybody. And so for 4 months in this apartment, I spent much of my time, you know, bawling in tears and going through all these just hugely, hugely very difficult things where, you know, if I had somebody on sharing a wall with my bathroom, I might have had the cops show up a lot. You know, why is this guy crying all the time? What the hell's going on with this guy? We're worried about this guy. So, you know, it was just really interesting how everything was laid out. I remember going into this apartment, and I was, one of the things I was working with at that time was, you know, I had all these synchronicities come up about loving yourself and trusting yourself. That was like a really core theme in the beginning. Loving yourself and trusting yourself. And, you know, my experience of, you know, all my projects failing and, you know, kind of that being the experience of opening up and, you know, the mindfulness that I was carrying into everything at that point, it just kind of continued to blossom. I remember one time, so when I went into this apartment, the carpets were horribly smelly. I remember asking the guy when I came to look at the apartment, all the windows were open, and I was like, so I want to make sure before I move in, right, the carpet isn't going to be all crazy and smelly and stinky. And he's like, oh, no, no. So, of course, when I move into the apartment, the carpet smells horrible. The carpet smells horrible. So I started doing all this research, and, you know, I'm trying to be mindful of my anger at, you know, having been, you know. But, you know, I'm trying to practice with trusting myself and learning, and so I'm using certain kind of carpet deodorizers and stuff like this, things that I would never have normally done. So I started to do all of these things to take ownership of a space that for the very first time in my life was mine. So when I was a kid, I was a kid. And when I was an adult, I was in the military, and then I was married, and then I was married again, and then, you know, I was dating, and I had all these other things going on, and then I was living with somebody, so I never really had a place that was mine. When I moved into this apartment, one of the things that I thought, like, I was very much enamored by the idea of abundance. Of abundance and of, you know, of, you know, like, wow, like, here I am, I'm this awakened being with this amazing power. Like, there was this whole sense of power that was coming out of the experience early on. And I was like, I'm going to use this, man. I'm going to be, there's going to be money, and there are going to be women, and I am going to create this environment where I can invite people in, and I'm going to swoon some people here. So it didn't end up being that. That was for like maybe the first two or three days. But then something deeper was speaking, and it became more of the tone of this is your sanctuary. And I remember there was a Bible verse that had come to me. And when I say come to me, it's usually synchronicities between music and materials I found myself reading at any given time. So I found there was this Bible verse that talked about when you're fasting, not to let them know that you're fasting, kind of thing. Like you need to go into a closet and, you know, fix yourself up or whatever it was, whatever the language of the particular verse was. And what was being presented to me as this is your sanctuary, this place that you're finding yourself in, it was almost very much, I am giving you this place so that you can unfold. And what began to happen to me at that point in time was things began to sing to me. And what I mean by that is, you know, I would look around the apartment, I'd say, all right, I don't own anything. I have no stuff. And so I'm going to create, I had money, I didn't have any financial obligations, I had lots of money. So I created a budget like $20,000. I was going to outfit this brand new apartment. I was going to make it beautiful. And again, here I'm practicing loving and trusting myself in a way that I had never practiced before. I had never been worthy of practicing it. So I wanted to go out into the world and engage the world from this position of loving myself, inviting beauty into my life. That's what it became about, inviting beauty into my life. So I would go to different stores and I would pay attention to the way different things felt, the energetic quality that they had to them. And certain things really and truly were meant to find their way into that new space. So I bought everything you can buy for a nice two-bedroom apartment. And I spent more than my budget. But it was beautiful. It was gorgeous. When people would come and visit with me, they'd be like, holy shit, this is really nice. And everything had a story. Everything. What's really interesting is most of the things that I had purchased were handmade or were kind of one-of-a-kind things. Or they had a special quality to them. Like, you know, they were the clearance item that had a ding. Or, you know, like everything had its own kind of unique character and its own unique quality. And it literally sang to me. It really did. It basically said, you know, of all the things here on this shelf, I am here to join you on your journey. I'm here to join you on your journey. Pick me up and take me home. There's a place for me. And as soon as I would get home, there would be a place for whatever it was. And so I had this beautiful home that I had created for myself. Beautiful home. Very spiritually oriented. Very, very spiritual. And what happened is this apartment, what happened in this apartment, I've said before, you know, there were like 4 or 5 months living in this apartment where so many things happened. So many things happened. I'll highlight a few of them. But for me, synchronicity at that point in time took the shape of music. It was a very real relationship, as if God was the DJ in the sky who was spinning every record that was playing, as if each and every song was chosen specifically to speak to me in a particular way at a particular time, and it always coincided with where my mind was, always. And another thing that began to happen is, you know, because I was listening to music, only on two, maybe three occasions, there was a voice that spoke very clearly to a very specific event that was occurring. Very clearly to a very specific event. And they were, one time, I was angry at God. I was angry at the universe because none of the stuff still didn't make sense to me. I wanted to know, where are the women? I was very lonely and very frustrated and very angry because I was going through all these stages. Like, you know, it would be very open and very embracing, and then, you know, like everything would expand and then everything would contract, and here I am again. I'm this tiny little person with this really big anger issue, and, you know, so I'm yelling at God, and I'm like, so I was in this place. I was fully dressed up. I was getting ready to walk out the door, and I was having this conversation with God about how I'm just going out and I'm going to get laid. I'm going out and I'm getting laid. And this voice came through the radio. The music stopped, and this voice came through the radio, and it said, "You do not understand what they are. You do not understand what they are." Very much, awakened beings don't go out grudge fucking. You don't do that. You don't do that. That's not okay. So that was one of those events. Another was one of the first real surrenders that I went into. And there were many, many surrenders. One of the first real ones that I went through, I was in the bathtub. And I had lit candles and I was listening to music and everything. And again, the music had stopped and the music was doing all the things it needed to do, but the music stopped, and it was the same voice. And the same voice said, it was something along the lines of, "Welcome, my son," or "Hello, my son," or, you know, it was something like that. Which, of course, you know, the ego loved. The ego loved. It just helped add to the story of, look, I'm the Buddha, I'm the Jesus, I'm that next being that's supposed to come into the world and rock it. Great. But it was very welcoming. It was very much, you know, just kind of letting me know what that presence was that was there, this thing that was moving in my life, because I was very fearful of all of it.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to the second part of my awakening story. Now, as I said earlier, I hope that there was something in this part of the story that was useful or helpful in some small way. If you enjoyed this podcast, then I invite you to check out my website at awakeningintolife.com, where you can find links to this podcast on multiple platforms, along with videos, articles, and additional information. You can also learn about the work that I do with people and the kinds of services that I offer. Well, that's it for this podcast episode, but please stay tuned for part 3 of my awakening story. In the third part of this series, I will be talking quite a bit about the fear, uncertainty, and doubt that I had to overcome. And I will also be talking about my time living on the streets of Seattle as a homeless man and a wandering ascetic. Thank you so much, and until next time, take care and be well.